This is part two, Kli Yakar and Parshas Vayechi. We're going to look at the comments which I shared with you on the brachos that Yaakov gives to Yehuda. I think we did the one on Shimon, is that right?
Yes,
we did. Yeah, we did the one on Shimon. Okay, so we're going to look at Yehuda and Dan and Naphtali. And I think we had a little bit on Yisachar also. Okay, so there's a number of things which we're going to get through. Okay, so let's take a look at the bracha of Yehuda first in the actual pasuk, and it's on page 276, Perek Men Tes Pasuk Ches. Okay, so after we get through Reuben and Shimon Levi, which the Kli Yakar actually shared with us, he said that there's a bracha in embedded in there, even if you don't see it in the pshat, but it's there. So that was beautiful pshat in which he shared it. So Yehuda is the first to get, I guess, what everybody accepts as being a bracha. Your brothers are going to acknowledge, your hand are going to be at your enemy's, the back of your enemy's neck, the nape, and your father's sons are going to bow before you. Gur Aryeh Yehuda, a lion cub is Yehuda, Miteref, Bini Alisa, from prey, my son, you have arisen. It's interesting, I think Rashi, is it Rashi who indicates that another way to read this is Miteref Bini, like from the possibility of tearing apart my son, you have arisen. But that's not what it means. Miteref, because the trup is there's a tipcha on the word Miteref. From prey, my son, you have arisen. So what that means, whether it's referring to Yosef or not, is an interesting question. But anyway, Karar Avatz Ke'aryeh, you crouch, you lie down like a lion, Uchalavimi Yikimenu. And like who will try to get you up? Lo yasur shevet miYehuda. And here's the bracha that we're most familiar with, and that is that the scepter is not going to depart from Yehuda, umechokek miBein Raglav, nor a scholar from among his descendants. Ad kevo Shilo, until Shilo shall arrive. And Shilo is often a reference to Mashiach, but essentially Yehuda is given the gift of kingship. O siri lagefen yiro v'lasareka bani. So no, he's going to tie his donkey to the vine, and to the vine branch his donkey's foal, which is interesting because of what we're going to be, I don't know if there's a connection to Yisachar, between Yehuda and Yisachar. The Kli Yakar doesn't really mention that, but Yisachar is often compared to a chamor, so the fact that he's an ason, you know, is there any connection there? I don't know, but anyway, chach li enayim yayin uleven shinayim chalav, red-eyed from wine, white-toothed from milk. Okay, so that's the blessing which is given to you. So let's see what the Kli Yakar tells us. If you have the booklet which I put together, it's on the bottom, page 2. Yehuda ata yuducha achecha. Okay, Yehuda. No. So of course the first credit which is given to Yehuda, the part which I actually didn't give you, is that Yehuda is Yaakov is noting that the whole Yehuda and Tamar incident, the fact that Yehuda was able to admit to a wrongdoing, if in fact what he did with Tamar was considered to be a wrongdoing, that just shows a strength of character that Yehuda has, that in the face of embarrassment and the evidence in front of him, but where he's the only one who knows that he may have made an error, he's able to admit it, which is takes a tremendous strength of character to be able to do that. So the Kli Yakar says, Habet Yamin Ure'e, look to the right and see, Ki b'shlishi, Hizkir Bir Chosam Me'in Shemam, Yehuda, Gad, Vidun. Okay, that in three of the brachos, Yaakov puts the name of the tribe in the actual bracha, Yehuda, Gad, and Dad. And I actually hinted to this a little bit in the Shabbos morning class, but I certainly didn't get all of these details. I spoke about it in the point of the connection of the Ari and the Aryeh and the Klavi, etc. But anyway, he says Yehuda al shem Yoducha Achecha. Okay, so the word Yodu is hinted to in the name Yehuda. Dan al shem Dan Yadin Amo. Dan will judge the people. That's Dan. Gad al shem Gedud Yigudenu. Okay, so you have the name of the tribe in each of these three brachas. B'shlosh Danim Shlul Aryeh, and all three of them are compared to a lion in some form. Yehuda Gur Aryeh. Yehuda is compared to a lion by Yaakov. Moshe Amar, and the other two comparisons to a lion are given by Moshe in Parshas Vezoza Bracha. Moshe Amar Dan Gur Aryeh, Ulugar Amar Baruch Marachiv Gad Klavi Shachin. Okay, why? Why are all three compared to a lion? L'fisha Shlosh Dan Nilchamu Milchamos Hashem, because all three of them fight God's fight. The wars on behalf of God. V'chein Yehuda Yado ba'orif oyvav, Yehuda's hand is on the nape of his enemy. That's another component to Yehuda's fighting, is where his hand is. V'danya dinamo, and what about the Dun will judge his people? Piresh Ramban, yinkom nikmas amo. That the idea of judging is not, according to the Ramban's interpretation, is about taking vengeance. Yinkom nikmas is about fighting, not just about judging. As is the simple understanding of the words Dun Yadin. V'gad shenemar v'taraf zaroa afkad kod. So there's a similar reference to what we saw in Yehuda about the word taraf. But he says, v'nirmezu shloshtan bepasuk v'hu yagud akev. And all three of them are hinted to in the verse where Yaakov says to God, yagudenev v'hu yagud akev, yagud, Yud Gimel Dalet is Rashi Tevos Yehuda Gad and Dan. Okay, so the Yud and the Gimel Dalet stands for those three tribes. Ki Yagud in Yano Lashon Krisa mi Lashon Godu Ilna. Okay, which is a quote from Daniel that Yagud comes from a word which means to cut. Okay, Yagud sounds like it's something which is tied together, but it's cutting. Ki Shloshtan Yachriso Evim, because all three will cut down the enemy. It's not because of their own personal strength, but it's because of the help which God gives them. Since God fights with his name, and only with his name, Hashem ish milchama, Hashem shemo, right, as we know from Az Yashir, God is a man of war. What does it mean God's a man of war? Hashem shemo, that it's Yud Kevavke, it's God's name which is the man of war, so to speak, that it's with God's name that God fights. So that is going to be embedded into these names. Kach Elu Ein Milchamtam B'chlei Zayin. So these three, Gad, Yehuda, and Dan, the fights which they engage in are not done with weaponry. It's a fight. It's Milchamos Hashem. Okay. In other words, what they represent for the Jewish people is a victorious battle against whatever it is which is trying to destroy the Jewish people. So Rabbeinu Chai says that if you look carefully, and we can go back through the thing, but I didn't double check it, but I'm sure it's true, that if you read through all the bracha to Yehuda, there's enough words in there that you're going to find every single letter of the Alphas, except for Zion. The Zion. Why? To show that the war which Yehuda is going to engage in is not going to include Klei Zion, actual weapons. You don't need weapons. Kiim b'shem Hashem. Okay, and of course Yehuda's name is the only name of all the tribes which has in it Shem Hashem. Right, the name of God is embedded in Yehuda's name. V'chein shalosh elu nilchamu b'shmam, and that's why they fight with their names. Ki kasher shavu ha'umos. As Shema Shemam, Behorash Shmosam, Miati Paul Hem Masafachad. And the idea that their bracha includes their name in it, right? Yehuda, Yodu, God Gudud Gudenu, and Dan Yadin, shows that it's their name in and of itself, which is essentially what their weapon is. So when people hear, oh, Yehuda's coming, then they know, ah! When they hear Dan is coming, ah! When they hear God is coming, ah! Because it's the name which is supposed to strike fear. Ki shem Yehuda Moresh called Yodu Lo. Ki elav Yasa Haromimus. People will. What does it mean? Yodu. Yodu means they're going to admit that they're going to accept and acknowledge the fact that Yehuda is a servant of God. V'danya din v'yinkom nikmasamo. That's what we saw. That was the Ramban's interpretation, which he mentioned. That danya din means that they're going to enact vengeance. V'gad lashon krisa, and God refers to cutting. V'zeh shamar l'fisha Yehuda, atayadu chachecha, v'shimcha yigrom lcha, shi'adcha ba'orif ayvecha. Yehuda, you are the acknowledged leader of your brothers, and it's your name which is going to cause that your hand will be on top of the neck of the nape of your enemy. So in other words, this is the bracha to Yehuda, that he's going to be successful over his enemy. And any success in battle, as we know, is going to require a certain element of a physical battle, right? David Melech Yisrael, right? He may be able to do whatever he accomplishes through his Torah, through whatever it is that he can achieve through his knowledge and his connection to God. But at the same time, what do we know about David? He's a great warrior, and that's on the real battlefield. So there is a convergence of two different ideas. But the point is that in an ideal sense, Yehuda, Gad, and Dan are supposed to represent the battles which are forged without clay Zion, without weapons, and whose names in and of itself cause the enemies to flee. The bracha to Yehuda continues. Gur Aryeh Yehuda, afapi shenim shal Aryeh shadarko l'trof teref. Even though he's compared to a lion, whose ways are to tear, mikom makom miteref bini yalisa. But nevertheless, you, my son, have lifted yourself up from teref. Lo hiskamta betrof teref Yosef. You did not agree to have Yosef or depart ela alisa. Nistalakta me'alachecha. You raised yourself up. You separated yourself from your brothers. I think we actually looked at this little component, by the way, on Thursday night. But Yered Yehuda me'esechav. Yehuda, the pasuk says that Yehuda descended from his brothers. Ritzalomar doesn't mean descended like that. He had a yerida that he went down. Rather, nistalek mehem. He separated himself from them. Ki lo ratzalios itam b'chabros. Somebody didn't want to be part of their group. That is what Vayered means. The Kli Yakar is taking that term, which we often understand to mean that it was a negative reflection of Yehuda's behavior in the sale of Mechiras Yosef. He says, no, Vayered means that he's separated, and it's not about going down. Oh, Alisa, or going up, is Lashon Ma'ala. Shemitzad, Teref B'ni, Shaloha Yelcha Chelek Bo, Alisa L'Ma'ala Zo. That since you did not have a portion in the suggestion to kill, so you were raised above that. So there's another way of looking at Yehuda's role there, and we see that this is a blessing to Yehuda, a yashar koyach to Yehuda, in terms of what he accomplished in that particular space.
Okay. But mamash, you could also look at it that mamash he went down a bit to raise up Yosef, and he did separate himself from his brothers. But Mama, she went maybe down in the pit to raise up Yosef and save him too.
Well, I don't know.
He alluded here to have to separate himself.
This Mechiras Yosef is a difficult story on many levels. But obviously, in terms of the role of the tribes, we see Reuven, we see Achim, who are assumed to be Shimon and Levi, and we see Yehuda. The Achim, you know, Vayom Ruvi Shal Achim, one says to the other, let's kill him. And Reuven says, we're not going to kill him, we're going to throw him in the pit. And then Yehuda comes along and he says, well, what's the benefit of keeping him in a pit, or what's the benefit of him dying? Let's sell him and at least he'll be saved, and we are not going to be guilty of any bloodshed. So the only one who actually does something to save, in other words, maybe the way that he's looking at Yehuda selling, because we look at Yehuda selling and say, you know, what do you mean you're selling him? Maybe Yehuda's saying, look, this is the only chance Yehuda has to survive. I got to send him far away. If I send him far away, he'll survive. And that's the perspective that Yaakov seems to be having. Now, there's a whole different discussion as to whether Yaakov actually knew what had taken place. And that lends itself to another can of worms. When you open up, when you try to read between the lines, you know, when all the things that Yaakov says to Yosef and to the brothers, and after the Berachos Yaakov, and as far as what the brothers say to Yosef in Yaakov's name, at the end of the Parsha, whether they're making it up or whether it's real, so we don't really know if Yaakov knew what had taken place. But in either case, the perspective that he's sharing is that Yehuda, you're on a different level in some manner, and that whatever role that you may have played in terms of Yosef's fate was the best that you could do under the circumstances. And
but why isn't Reuven looked upon that way too? Because he also had an intent.
So it's a little more difficult. There's a Gemara which is repeated in a couple of places in the Midrash. I first read it in Rus Rabbah, in which three people are put into the same category of had they only known, then they would have acted differently. And the three of them are Boaz, that had Boaz known that when he gave Rus the grain, that this would be recorded for posterity, he would have given her fattened calves. That's the Boaz one. Aaron, which is actually in this week's Parsha, when Moshe comes back, had he known that the way he greeted Moshe would be recorded in the Torah, he would have greeted Moshe with a marching band, something like that. And the other one is Reuven. Had Reuven known that his attempt at saving Yosef would have been recorded in the Torah, he would have picked Yosef up and taken him home to his father on his shoulders.
Yeah.
Right, I'm saying, how do you know? That's the measure. So when you look at that, you say, all right, Reuven, it's very nice what you did, but the fact of the matter is that you failed. whatever your intent was it didn't work. And even if you know, again, from this perspective, it's not for me to criticize Reuven. I don't understand the family dynamic in the way that Yehuda understood the family dynamic. So if Reuven, let's say Reuven had done that. Okay, so would that have resolved? No, they would have just taken it at the next opportunity when Reuven wasn't around. Maybe Yehuda's looking at it and saying, look, having Yosef around is not good for anybody. We need there to be distance. And maybe from this perspective, he's saying that the creation of distance was actually good. And it ended up allowing the distance of What's the word? The distance of locale, right? The fact that Yosef is in Egypt, right? The distance of space, and also as a result, the distance of time. Now, who could have anticipated what's going to happen here? You think that Yehuda, when he said let's sell Yosef, that he's anticipating that Yosef's going to become a king? I mean, who knows? You can't give Yehuda that kind of credit. He has no idea. But at least from this perspective, the role which Yehuda plays is not viewed as negative. And I think that it's a unique perspective, and that's what we're trying to get out of this Kli Yakar class, the insights which we don't often hear because we're so embedded in studying Rashi. Yeah. We're so embedded in, you know, looking at the Ramban, maybe, that you don't hear this other side. That's one of the benefits of what we're trying to accomplish here.
Learning Don Likov's course, when you said this thing about Boaz and about Reuben and everything, if you take it to that next level, you're really giving them a hard Drager by saying if they knew, they would have...
Right, so there are different perspectives. The first time I heard that midrash, I was in high school, and why? No, I'll tell you why. Because it was at I was in the dormitory in MTA for 2 years, and at the end of the year, they had an award ceremony for people who were good about night seder. Okay, when you're in the dormitory, you're not going home, so you have time. You have a lot more. You know, some of the people that commute was an hour and a half. It's New York City traffic. You know, during rush hour. So the principal gets up and he says. And he quotes this midrash. He said, had you only known that you would be rewarded for all your night seder, for all your learning, you know, you would have all, like, you know. So that's the first time that I heard that midrash and the message therein. Okay.
Give the place once again for everybody here.
Sure. Okay, so we're on page 3 in the little packet, Pasuk Tezvav, and now in the Chumash, we're going to skip Zvulun, and we're going to go to Yisachar, okay, so, which is on page 278 in the Chumash. Perek Memtes Pasuk Yidalad. Okay, so Perek Memtes Pasuk Yidalad, Yisachar Chamor Gorim. Okay, following along the lines of just a mini theme, Yaakov compares some of his sons, you know, in a metaphorical kind of way to animals. So we saw Reuben was compared to a lion. Yisachar is being compared to a donkey. Yisachar Chamor Garim is a strong-boned donkey. Rovetz Benim Shosayim, who rests between the boundaries. Vayar Menucha Kitov Yisaharz Ki Naima. He sees tranquility and it's good, and the land that it is pleasant. Vayet Shechmol Lisbol. He bends his shoulder to bear. Vayhilim Asoved, and he becomes an indentured laborer. Okay, I'm just using Archibald's translation for ease. When we think about Yisachar, what do we know about Yisachar?
Learn.
Okay? Torah. Okay, and by the way, we should know that the classic view of what Zvulun and Yisachar is a partnership, but it's not the kind of partnership that we think. Okay, when somebody comes collecting money for learning in Kolel, and he says, you're Zvulun and I'm Yisachar, the correct response is, what raw materials are you providing? Okay, the idea of Zvulun and Yisachar was that Zvulun, they have the ships and they're the merchants, they're the salesmen, but who's the supplier? Okay, Yisachar is the supplier. That's the idea behind the Yisachar Zvulun. That Yisachar is at least providing raw material. It's not that they don't work at all. It's that they're sitting in an office and they're sending their salespeople off, their merchants off. And then after they take care of that business, then they get back to Torah learning. And so they have more time, and they're covering for Zvulun in a sense. It's not that Zvulun is going out doing all the work, earning all the money, and coming over to Yisachar and say, here's your handout. It doesn't work that way. That's not what Yisachar and Zvulun are supposed to be. So, and anybody who tells you otherwise hasn't delved into it. They're just looking for a handout, and that's improper. It's not what the Torah's view, the true Torah's view of Zvulun and Yisachar relationship is. But anyway... So when it comes to Vayar Menucha Kitos, take a look at the Kli Yakar here. He says, "Vayam nuchakitov." He sees that rest, that it's good. Ki ein kinyan haTorah tolui bitenua kemo kinyan amamon. He says the kinyan Torah, the acquisition of Torah, is not dependent upon you know movement, just as the kinyan of mamon, just as the acquisition of money is. Ki al rov mimerchak yavi lachmo. Where is mimerchak yavi lachmo?
From a distant place.
Well, where is mimerchak yavi? Isn't that from Eishes Chayil? Okay. Because for most people, where do you get your bread from? You got to go out. You got to go seek it out. It doesn't come to you. But what? How does the Torah acquired? The way that a person acquires Torah is through the tremendous efforts that are what's the word? I'm looking for, not expounded, whatever it is. Okay, that come out through the work of the nefesh and through the resting of the body. And you can't, if you're busy going out there and doing things, it's hard to have a kinyan of Torah, to have an acquisition of Torah. That's why Torah was given on Shabbos, because you can't be working when you're trying to acquire Torah. And that's a continuation of the brachat Yisachar and the land that it is pleasant. Ki eretz Yisrael avira demachkimhu, that the land of Israel has an air and an atmosphere that causes that helps wisdom grow. Vayeitchech mol lizbol, right? Vayeitchech mol lizbol, and continuing in the bracha to Yisachar, see, he bends his shoulder in order to bear the yoke of Torah, all Torah. V'yavol pishakinyan haTorah kodem b'mala lekinyan stam schora. And even though the acquisition of Torah is a much higher level than the acquisition of business, kitov sakra mikol schora, because the reward of Torah is greater than the reward of any material acquisitions. Mikol makdom higdim es zvulon liyisachar. But nonetheless, who gets the bracha first? Zvulun gets before Yisachar. Ki im ein kamach, ein Torah. Okay, that's such an important lesson. I remember when I lived in Forest Hills, so we went to the Queen's Jewish Center where Rabbi Grimblatt, Zechut Zalik Baruch, an incredible rabbi. Okay, just a wonderful, top-notch rabbi, tremendous Talmud Chacham, everything. Twice a year he would give his anti-kolel speech. Okay, what was his anti-kolel speech? Basically, he would say that a system where people are only learning and not contributing to society is unsustainable. It doesn't work. It doesn't work. And we see this. I'm not going to go in that realm. Rabbi Grimblatt has much bigger shoes and much bigger shoulders. So if that's what he's going to do, fine. But we see this in other cultures as well. Where forget about kolel. I'm not looking to knock. But you look in any culture where a majority of able-bodied people do not work. What does their culture look like? Okay, I'm not. I don't need to put labels. We can all imagine in societies which we're familiar with around the world, when able-bodied people aren't working, it's a society that doesn't sustain itself. On the one hand, you have a tremendous amount of poverty, and at the very top, you typically have a tremendous amount of corruption. And there's a huge gap between the top and the poverty. And in some cases, chesed fills the gap. But in some cases, the corruption precludes the ability for there to be chesed. So anyway, v'im lo yuchal v'yishteh ech yu'evaru chazakim. So yeah, you need to have flour, you need to have sustenance, you need to have a way to put food on the table in order to acquire Torah. And if a person can't eat and drink, ech yu'evaru chazakim. You need to have strong limbs, strong organs. You need to have a body that can actually function healthfully in order to litroach, to have the tircha. But again, it's a positive tircha of Torah Hashem. So that's why Zvulun is blessed first, so that from a distance he can bring the bread. So that Yisachar can actually spend that time of being a Yosheva Olim, one who dwells in the tent. V'gam Yisachar notein michelko b'Torah el Zvulun. So Yisachar gives a part of his portion of Torah to Zvulun. Shema'ala lo mas oved avodah mamish. It's like giving a tax for the service which he's doing was Eshem Harkasuva, Yehi Lamas Oved, and that's the very last part of Yisachar's blessing, that he became an indentured laborer. In other words, there is a partnership going on here. Now, by the way, from the fact that Zvulun goes out and he gets a share of Yisachar's Torah learning, does that mean that Zvulun has no obligation in Torah study? Anybody?
No, of course he does.
Of course he does. Yeah, okay? Right, so I'm saying it goes both ways. Like, yeah, so Zvulun is not going to be sitting in the base medrash. That's okay. That doesn't mean that Zvulun is completely putter. So Yisachar is not the merchant going out there. Okay, that doesn't mean that Yisachar shouldn't be doing anything. Shouldn't be doing anything. And for me...
But he gets the opportunity for a double star.
All right, though they both do. I mean, this is just my own little hankering. Whenever people have knocked on my door in the past, you know, saying, you know, can you please help me out? My first question is always, what do you do other than, you know, sit in the koilel or whatever? Because it's because, and this is the same. And I'll throw this out then. What do you think? This is what Zvulun and Yisachar is. Are you making an effort? Are you doing something? Because there's no allowance for you to not have some kind of effort. There's no allowance, right? There's, you know, there's a joke about people who do this. You know, how come those who only learn didn't accept the Torah? You know the midrash about all the different nations who were offered the Torah. It says lo sirtzach, it says lo signo. You know, not allowed to murder. That's our culture. So not allowed to steal. That's our culture. Not allowed to commit adultery. That's our culture. See, that the other joke is the Torah says sheshes yamim ta'avod. Six days you have to work. Oh, no, we can't accept the Torah. So, you know, it doesn't work that way. The Torah says you have to have a job of some kind. You have to earn money. And it's not about him.
Well, but they earn a stipend in the Kola.
No,
whatever.
If you have that discussion, you know.
Okay, you can have that discussion. You can have that discussion. You can have a discussion. I have anecdotal evidence. Anecdotal evidence which suggests that for the stipend which is being earned for the stipulation of what they're supposed to be doing, it's very few and far between the people who are sitting the whole day and actually learning. There's a lot of coffee breaks. There's a lot of bittelsman. Not everybody, but it's a difficult thing to assess because there is no assessment. So yeah, you have your mitzvah, but at the same time, you have some people who shouldn't be there, and it's unfortunately not a way for able-bodied people to function. It's not a self-sustaining system. Thank God there are people who want to support that, but it's not the answer. I'm just quoting Rabbi Grimblatt.
Is this the Kliyah card that actually puts this in? Torah is the best described here with the words.
No, that's not his line. That's from the Pirkei song. Kita Yisachar Mikol Schayra. Kita Yisachar Mikol Schayra. Chaim Manu Oizvi Yaira. B'degla Guda B'Yaira Taira. Okay. Who are the most honored people in the Aguda, by the way? Yes, it's the Rosh Yeshiva, but I promise you it's not the Kollel people. It's the philanthropists who support the Kollel people. Okay, so let's be honest about whatever it is. Okay, so that's anyway. We move on. The next one that we have is Dan. Okay, it's the very next pasuk. Dan yadin amok yachad shiftei Yisrael. Dan will judge his nation as one of the tribes of Israel. Although the way the article translates it, the tribes of Israel will be united as one. Ke'achad, not ke'echad. Interesting. Okay, will be united as one. Yehidan, nachash aliderach, is another one who's compared to an animal, to a snake. Dan will be a serpent on the highway. Shpifon aliorach, a viper by the path. Hanoshechi keveisus, who bites the horse's heels. Vayipol rochavo achor, so that the rider will fall back. I'm not going to get into the debate as to whether Lishua Sechakev Yisi Hashem is part of Dan's bracha, or whether Lishu Aschel Kavisi Hashem is Yaakov just having a moment in which he steps out from giving the bracha for a second and says, I seek out for your salvation, or I long for your salvation, Hashem. Anyway, so here's Dan. So we're in the middle of page 3. Okay? Yomar she'avu bishabidgalim Yehudan oseh b'rishonah v'dan b'achronah. Even though in the camps, if you know the way the camps are divided, and I think it's mentioned in the beginning of the book of Bamidbar, I just don't know if the article has a map about it. That'd be a good question.
Dun is always
right, but Dun in his own camp, Dun is not the last. Dun is actually the head of his camp. Okay, so whether done is actually the last is an interesting, you know, is that's just a semantical question as far as does the leader of that group travel in the front or travel most outward towards the, you know, towards the elements. I don't think the, unless there's a map in the back. I'm trying to think. I don't know, but it's certainly not in the actual Chumash because I was just looking there and didn't see it. In this one, it might not have it. Yeah. Hold on, let's see. No, it's not here. I'm just looking for a chart that would show how the people camped around the Mishkan. But it would be in the book of Bamidbar because that's where it explains it, in the Parsha Bamidbar. But it's not. They don't have an illustration here as I thought they would have. But anyway, so Yehuda was in the east, I believe, and Yehuda is together with Yisachar and Zebulun. So Yehuda is there, and since they're traveling eastward and northward, so Yehuda is in the group, and in the south. You know, I don't remember. No. Hold on. The south is Reuven, and Reuven has with him Shimon and Gad. So it's not that. Who's in? So Dan, I think, it was in the north. So I'm not really sure why they have that. I mean, I could just double check because I just have it here. It's in Bamidbar. It's right there. Here, Ayubnei Reuven. No. Hold on. Perek Beis. Hold on. Bamidbar Beis. Here we go. So Degel Machane Reuven Teimana. So that's to the south. That's Reuven. Degel Machane Ephraim with Sivosam Yama. That's to the west. Degel Machane Dan. Safona. Dan is in the north. Okay, and Dan was attached to the two other tribes of the Shvachos who were not included with Reuven. Reuven and Shimon are together with Gad because Gad is the oldest of Zilpah's. That's why he's put together with Reuven and Shimon because Zilpah is Leah's maid and Gad is therefore placed together with Reuven and Shimon because Yehuda was his own. So Yehuda is attached to his two younger siblings, Yisachar and Zvulun. And then Dan, who is the oldest of all the sons of the Shvachos, Dan is with his brother Naphtali, and together with Asher, because Asher is left over. You need to have three in each area. So Dan was in the north. So why Dan is considered to be in the back? Because they're traveling northeast, right? For the most part, so I'm not really sure where that comes from. But in any case, not to get too sidetracked, Dan is in the back, whatever. Mikol makom, yishavalo gamhu shiadines amo, kechad, kimyuchad, shebeshevet Yisrael, bihu Yehuda. Okay, so Dan is, in other words, not following Articles translation. It says Dan Yadinamo Ki Achad Shitei Yisrael. Dan is going to be like one of the tribes of Israel. So Kliyak are saying, who's the tribe of Israel Dan's going to be like? Like Yehuda. Ki Shimshon Shafat Es Yisrael B'doro Ki David B'doro. Shimshon, who was from the tribe of Dan, judged the nation of Israel in his generation, as David judged in his generation. Ukamoshne Marbamel Chamashiach Sheyavo Yehuda. And as it says regarding the King Messiah, that he's going to come from Yehuda, Ruach Svasav Yamis Rasha, and with the wind which comes from his mouth, he'll kill an enemy. Kach Yehi Dan Nachash Ali Derech. That is how Dan is going to be, or so too Dan is going to be like a serpent on the road. Kichol Nachash Mimis Beruach Svasav, because how does a serpent kill? With what comes from his mouth. Okay, not the ruach, but obviously we know how a serpent kills is with the venom. And from the phrase that says that he will judge his nation, Shema Minash Medaber Birish E Yisrael, it's referring to the wicked people of Israel. Sheyadin Osam, that he's going to judge them. V'yichla Kotzim Min Kerem Hashem Tzvaos, and he'll remove the thorns from the vineyard of God. Alkenaya Min Hecher Sheisa Yehuda Barishona, and that's why Yehuda was supposed to travel first, v'dan ba'achrona, and done in the back. Lefi sheYehuda nimshal de'aryeh shigar kocho biznavo. Yehuda is compared to a lion whose main strength. I mean, I don't know what it means. His main strength is from his zanav. Zanav is a tail. But anyway, ve'imkein kishalach Yehuda lefnei machane Yisrael ve'acharav klapei am domek ilu znavo ponel machane Yisrael remes shebo yedin amol b'shbor zeros ramos.
Oh, so he's in the front and his tail is behind, with all of Israel behind him.
Right. So in other words, I don't think it's so much his strength of like fighting. It's obviously when a lion fights, it doesn't fight with its tail. But I think it means that it's leadership. Okay. In other words, like when we say Shneiel Rosh Velo Zanav, we're leading with our head. But how do you follow me? you look at my tail. That's how you follow. So I think that's what that's probably what it, more what it means. V'dan nimshal l'nachash she'in kocho el b'fiv. And dan is compared to a snake whose strength is only, well, I mean, except for a constricting kind of snake, but whose strength is with its mouth. Al kain dinu she'isav achrona u'piv ponel machane Yisrael kiboya dinamo. So he has to be behind Israel, so that his mouth, where his source of strength is, because I mean, what's a snake's tail? Nothing. There's nothing. It's all. There's no leadership. If you follow a snake, I mean, there's nothing. It's all of its strength is in its head. Lufisha kol dayan yeshlo rabim akamim alav. And since every judge has people who go against him, al kain amar lo saguru mipnei ish. Therefore, he's told that, in other words, judges are told, don't be distraught by those who are going to be attacking you. It's for your salvation that I'm looking for God. And God stands in the community of God to save them from strong people. In other words, the Dan is being given a blessing that they shouldn't cave. Okay, because what's going to happen? You're a judge. So the first thing that's going to happen is, oh, I don't like your judgment, so you know we're going to attack you. This happens like in every police TV show. Right? Somebody gets out of jail, or movie, right? Somebody gets out of jail, and who's the person he wants to go after? The judge who sentenced you to prison, right? Why? So he says, don't give in to that. Don't be afraid of that. Be strong in what you do. You have to not cave to those who are going to try to force your hand. Shadan lohaya machnif l'shivto elohaya dan ke'achad shvatei Yisrael k'shar shvatim ki karov rachok hayushavim be'inav. That one of the great things about Dan is that he wasn't like machnif means to flatter. He didn't favor his own tribe, because sometimes your tendency is to favor your own. Dan didn't do that. Dan looked at everybody, karov v'rachok, those who were close and those who were further away, shavim be'inav, they're equal in his eyes. In other words, equality in the eyes of the law, which is what you need to have. And so this is a tremendous blessing to Dan, because you might think, you know, it's like there's the old thing, oh, did you get, let's say somebody has to go, I remember this is one of my favorite stories that Rabbi Yosef Blau from YU told me when he was sitting shiva for his father. He told me that his father was a traffic court judge, and he has on the desk, you know, his name Blau. I don't remember what his father's first name was, but Blau. He says Blau is not an identifiably Jewish name; it's a Germanic name. So he'd come in there, and he said to me when I there was nobody else there when I was visiting him. He said to me that that his father, you know, loved. I put the word loved in quotes, but his father loved when a person with a big yarmulke would come into the traffic court to argue, for example, why he parked in front of a hydrant, or why he double parked, saying, I ran in for afternoon services at a synagogue, because Rabbi Blau's father was from man, right? But he wasn't wearing his yarmulke when he's being the traffic court judge. And he would lay it, he says, what, you think you're going to hide your breaking of the law behind religion? What gives you the business? You know, you're not allowed to do that. You got to be a straight shooter. You think, oh, I'm going to get a frum judge. Oh, he's going to give me leniency. No, he's not going to give you leniency. You broke the law. You park in front of a hydrant. You double park in a place where there's no double parking zone. What do you think this is here? And that's what Dan was supposed to be. That everybody's shoving be'enav. Everybody's equal in his eyes. And you got to follow the law. And there's no preferential treatment here just because you're from the tribe of Dan, or just because you happen to wear a yarmulke on your head. It doesn't work that way. You got to follow the law. Next paragraph, second last paragraph, page 3. Moshe compared Dan to a lion, and Yaakov compares him to a snake. Remez shekol dayan yeshel milchama panim ve'achor. That he says that it's a hint that every judge has this battle, like in front of him and behind him. Yesh b'izim b'fanav lomar lo mosif ani alecha dayanim. Okay, there are those who are me'izim panav. Right? In other words, they mock him, saying, you know what? You know, we need to have more judges because you're no good. K'moshe ne'amar, torchachem u'asachem v'rivchem. Moshe, in the beginning of the book of Devarim, says, I had a problem at the time when I didn't have enough judges. Yisrael was saying, how can you carry the whole burden yourself? And Moshe said, Echa salavadich, torchachem u'asachem v'rivchem. How can I carry all these burdens alone? So in other words, people are saying, you can't handle it, so we need to have more judges. And that's what people were attacking him from the front. V'yesh miranei nacharav avalo b'funav. And there are those who talk about him, but not in his face. Alkein tzarech lios balkoch ve'amitz ruach l'lchom panim ve'achor. When they talk about him, they're not talking, I promise you, they're not talking positively about him, okay? Ugh, that judge, whatever, you know. But not in front of his face. So he needs to be able to have the strength of character to fight against that and that. In other words, not to fight, in other words, to not let that bring him down. He shouldn't pay attention to the things that people say about him. He says the lion, again, I don't understand what he means when he says that the lion has his strength from behind, beyond what I said before. But that's something which he's clearly sticking to, a party line about what the Aryeh, where the Aryeh's strength is, and the Nachash, the snake has his strength from in front. So he's saying that Dun, because of the role as judge that Dun has to play, Dun needs to have the strength from both the front and the back to not cave to the pressures which are going to come from all sides. Amazing. Awesome. Okay, we move on to Naphtali. Naphtali. Okay, let's take a look at the thing in Naphtali. Okay, so Naphtali is on page 280, Pasuk Chaf Aleph. Okay, Naphtali, Ayala, Shalucha, Hanosein, Nimrei Shafar. Naphtali is a hind let loose and delivers beautiful sayings. Now, just before we get into this, there are a number of different interpretations. I've seen at least two or three about what that means. It's Ayala means a hind, right? It's a kind of deer, but it can also be referring to a tree. And the other interpretation, you know, there's that the interpretation about a tree is about how the tree's branches are shlicha, they're spread out, and so Naphtali is able to cover those for whom he cares about. So that's another way of presenting Naphtali. But anyway, so he says here, let's see, which part did I give you? So I want to just skip to the part of Karov Be'enai, because he mentions a number of these different interpretations as to what Naphtali is, but skip to this set, the third line, third word, Karov Be'enai Lomar. Karov Be'enai Lomar, She'imrei Shefer, that what are the Imrei Shefer, the beautiful sayings that that Naphtali spreads? Hainu HaTorah, it's the Torah that Naphtali shares. V'alkeinim Shilo La'ayala, why are words of Torah compared to an ayala? Lomar lecha, an ayala being a deer. Lomar lecha, ma ayala, rachama tsar v'chaviva al ba'ala. Kol sha'a kisha'a rishona. Av divrei Torah, chaviva al ba'ala, kol sha'a kisha'a rishona. Just as an ayala, its mercy and its love for its master it always goes back to its original feeling. So the same thing about Divrei Torah. It goes on its on those who own it, and the feeling is kol sha'a kisha'a rishona, that every moment of Torah study should feel like the first one. In other words, there should be a love for something which is new. I don't know, I mean, I can't speak for anybody else, but I remember that even though we were far too young to be learning Gemara in fifth grade, a different conversation. But I remember being given a first Gemara and thinking, wow, we've arrived. I mean, you know, kids are given this feeling with their first Siddur and their first Chumash, and you're like, and you love it, and you're into it, until you realize that it's hard. That's a different conversation. But the point is that when you first get it, I remember, you know, any boy, just to give a different example, who's a shul-going child, who's watching all the kids who are older than him get their tefillin, right? Gets very excited. It's like, you know, I remember as an 11-year-old taking anything that was long enough, you know? So whether fishing twine, kite string, or whatever, you know, just to get into it, wrapping it around the arm. So that's the feeling that's supposed to come. Ulai shal zeh darshu nofes li ki divrei Torah misukim b'dvash v'nofes tzufim. He says that think no face li. Look, what's no face li? Look, I mean, what else can you read? Right, but what does that mean? But look at the word no face li. What does that almost sound like?
Naphtali.
Okay, Naphtali. Naphtali. Okay, that what's the thing that the words of Torah should be sweet like honey. Ratzomah lefisha nikra Naftali al shem shedibrei Torah mitukim kinofes tzufim lefiv. Okay, he's named Naftali because the words of Torah should be sweet to him. Kinofes tzufim lefiv. Alken yizakel liyos kayala shechaviva baalak al shak shavishon of yitainim reshefer. She gives sweet teachings. Shafilu divrei Torah shenisiyashnu befiv. Even the words of Torah which become old in his mouth, harehem imrei shefer, they should be beautiful sayings nonetheless. Ki shefer morel davar chadash shehu b'shofarov v'yofio. Shefer is a reference to something which is new. In other words, the words of Torah should always be like a chiddush to him.
What is it? I don't understand that the ayalah clings to its mass.
Yeah, so I'm not sure either. There may be another interpretation of ayalah. I mean, we typically translate ayalah as a deer. I don't know what it means to have a deer that has a master. I mean, it's a wild animal. So, but somehow, I mean, this could be a word which I'm missing. In other words, ayalah has other meanings. But I mean, I'm not aware of it referring to a different kind of animal. I mean, like here, for example, you know, he says, the article says here, Naphtali's territory, its crops will ripen swiftly, like a hind let loose to run free. Okay, I don't know if it's referring to that. If it's referring to crops, that's another way to look at it, but I'm not sure. Okay, well, we'll leave it at that. I mean, you know, when he says ulai as darshu no face liki devetar misukim edvash no face sufim, so maybe he is referring to him. In other words, maybe he's looking at that interpretation. He does mention it. No face li tofna sif sosav maro ver al day bisuros tovoshay b'maserviyish first al peirosav shemarim lispashel. In other words, the second interpretation which he gives here is fruits which ripen quickly. We know seinim rei shefar al day mikra bikurim or birkas peiros. Even though that's not the interpretation which he says, he says karob beinai lomar. That Imre Shefer, that the beautiful sayings are Torah, and then he goes off into this perspective that he shares. Okay, I'm sorry, I can't give you a better answer because I'm not sure. Okay, let's look at Yosef. So we look at the interpretation of Yosef, the blessing to Yosef rather. Pasuk Hafez, Bebaraz Yosef, Bebaraz Aliayim, Benos Adal Alishur, a charming son is Yosef, a charming son to the eye. Each of the daughters climbed heights to gaze. They embittered him, became antagonists. The arrow-tongued men hated him. His bow was firmly in place. His arms were gilded from the hands of the mighty power of Yaakov. From there, he shepherded the stone of Israel. From the God of your father, he will help you with Shaddai. He will bless you with blessings of heaven from above, blessings of the deep crouching below, blessings of the bosom and the womb. The blessings of your father surpass the blessings of my parents. Ad ta'avas givos olam, to the endless bounds of the world's hills. Let them be upon Yosef's head and upon the head of the exile from his brothers. Okay, so there's a lot of imagery which is included here, but there is one particular or two particular focus that I wanted to bring out, and that is Ben Paras Yosef, Ben Paras Ale Ayin. Take a look at the interpretation of the Kuyakar. Yachash is kir nezuk shel ayin hara shel ko ro'ov shenitzel mimenu. After he mentions the damage of ayin hara that comes from those who see him, from which he's saved. Chazal azkir inyan sheni b'domelo. He mentions a second topic. He gamechav niskanu bo v'nosnu bo enehem. There are people who look at Yosef from outside the family and they're jealous, and his brothers from inside are also jealous, and he's saved from them too. That vayimararuhu varobu. Okay, again, that's they embittered him and became antagonists, and the arrow-tongued men hated him. He says, varobu kamo rovek kashas. Hey, who's a rovek kashas? That's an image of Yishmael. What do we know about Yishmael? That after he is saved with the incident where he almost died, He becomes a
hunter.
Well, what's a rove kashas?
A hunter, no?
Right, a hunter, right? Somebody who's right. I'm saying, but that's what the word.
Yeah.
So in other words, vayemaru varobu varobu. So, you know, the article translates it as and they became antagonists. He's saying varobu means that they. What's the kind of antagonists that they're using arrows? In other words, that's the it's an offshoot of vayistamu ba'alei chitzim. So in other words, it's going back to Yosef's experience with his brothers, which again opens up the question of whether Yaakov knew what the brothers were trying to do. But the point that the Kol Yaakov is bringing out is that the brothers wanted to kill Yosef with an arrow. Shenemar, as the pasuk says right before the mechiras Yosef, that before Yosef shows up, they talked about trying to kill him. Well, how do you kill him before he shows up? I know Ali Dechetz. They wanted to kill him with an arrow. They viewed him as a person who was motzi diba, who slandered them. And what's the imagery of slander? That you shoot an arrow. As if you're slandering somebody, you're shooting from a distance.
Shooting words.
Right? Shooting words. His tongue was arrows. They thought that it would be appropriate, since he's shooting arrows of slander at them, that they could shoot back arrows at him, measure for measure, but they would use a real arrow and kill him. So those who are here for the class on Parshas Vayeshev, you remember what the Kli Yaakov's interpretation about Yosef bringing Diba Samra up. What was Diba Samra? Not that he slandered them, that he was telling their father about their Diba, about the sons of Bila and Zilpah, that they were saying that they're the sons of maids, they're not real shvatim. So they felt that what Yosef was doing was also shooting arrows. But they were also those who were shooting arrows at their own brothers. So Yosef brought the diba that they were espousing, Elavihem, that they were talking about the sons of Bilhah and Zilpah, or Dan Naphtali Gad and Asher, to their father. Lefikach Vatesha Beisan Kashto Shel Yosef. What is Vatesha Beisan Kashto? His bow was firmly in place. Okay? Whose bow was firmly in place? The Keshes, the bow of Yosef. Shari Mutter Lomar Lashon Hara Baalei Machlokas. You're allowed to say Lashon Hara about people who foment argument and division. Lefizeh Yosef's bow, in other words, that he was telling their father stuff about them, that was operating according to halacha. The brothers could be called those who were arrow bearers. And it was Yosef's arrow which was properly ensconced in this situation. Ki ro'eh zonos yovad hon. So vayafozu zeroei adav. That's the next piece of the bracha, or however you want to, you know, Yaakov's statements. Vayafozu's arms were gilded. Okay, vayafozu zeroei adav. So he says here, ki ro'eh zonos yovad hon. The one who shepherds, prostitutes will be lost. Who lo ayah ro'eh zonos be'ishes potifar. So Yosef did not fall prey to that. Yosef was not the one who shepherded prostitutes. In other words, because he overcame her seduction, in Israel, his own merit was that he should become not a roeh, a shepherd for Zonos, but a shepherd to save Israel. Okay, so in other words, what Yaakov is addressing, according to the Kol Yaakov's interpretation, through his explaining the different images that Yaakov is presenting to us, is that Yosef was above and beyond every accusation hurled at him. What are the accusations hurled at him? That he is a Baal Lashon Hara, right? Because he spoke evil about his brothers, and that he is a Baal, right? Baal Znus, that he falls prey to the seduction of the wife of Potiphar. And the bottom line is that in terms of the way he spoke about his brothers, he was completely in the right. And in terms of what happened with the wife of Potiphar, Yosef overcame whatever it was that she threw at him. And so the last piece that we have here is Birchos Avicha Gavru Al Birchos Harai, the blessings of your father surpass the blessings of my parents. Hainu Kamo Cheder Horasi Ki Abrachos Shekibaldi Adeimi Hayu Beikva Remia Chemilsa De Tamirsa Mipnei Esav. He says Yaakov is comparing himself to Yosef. He's saying, how did I get the brachos that I got? I got them because my mother told me to, you know, sneak around and to you know, trick. I had to put on my brother's clothes. My father was blind. And so I didn't really deserve it. And whatever I got, I really stole from what Esav was supposed to get. Avil berchos avicha, shenatala b'chora, mino achim v'natan Allah. But the bracha of your father, in other words, which was given to you, prior to all of this, when did Yaakov give the bracha of the bechorah to Yosef? Earlier in the parsha, right, when he's talking about to Ephraim and Manasseh, and he says, I've given you Shechem Achad Alachecha, Ephraim and Manasseh, like Reuben and Shimon. All that preceded the bracha which Yaakov is giving here. That bracha, the brachos avicha, I mean, Yaakov is referring to himself, but the brachos avicha, the bracha which you got from me, that you got the bechorah, which was taken from your brothers, I mean, from Reuben most specifically, but and it was given to you. Hainu nesina gluya before semes atavas givos olam. This is something which was done openly in the public, so that nobody can make a complaint. Kibachol arba ruchos olam yachol atalis by Abraham. You can be proud of from all perspectives. You don't have to hide anything. You don't have to run away from anything. Tiyana the rosh Yosef. It should be Yosef's head. You chedvar amunach al rosh akad kot. It's on Yosef. Afal pi shebechora nizir echav. What does it mean that the bechora is nizir echav? So lamar nikuchim umufurashim in shar echav hagdolim, that it's taken from and it's umufurashim, not mufurashim, mufurashim, and it's separated from the rest of your brothers. In other words, what Yaakov is saying is, yeah, Reuven's the bechora, but it's not about Reuven. Most of your brothers are older than you. If not, I mean, I mean, obviously Binyamin's not older than him. It's possible Zevulun wasn't older than him either. Because of the way it's presented in the Torah. But the fact of the matter is that most of his brothers are older than him, and nonetheless, they're all bypassed in order for Yosef to get the Bechora. You can walk around with this crown of Bechora held high on your head that everybody can see, which is the opposite of the brachos that I got from my parents. I had to contradict them, and when I met Esav in Parshas Vayishlach, I had to say to Esav, you know, the brachas didn't come true, so you shouldn't be mad at me, it didn't happen, nothing to worry about. And I needed to hide for so many numbers of years, and that's not something that you need to worry about, Yosef. So in other words, it's an additional blessing to Yosef. I mean, it could be just on account of Yosef's own story, the trajectory of his life, and how it got to this point. But what Yaakov is essentially saying is that if there was jealousy once upon a time, it doesn't exist now. We don't know about Esav, whether he ever completely got rid of the jealousy that he had of his brother. I mean, you know, he and Yaakov, in their own way, they reconciled in the middle of Parshas Vayishlach. But clearly, by the end of this Parsha, we see, for example, that Yosef's brothers fall at his feet and they say, "Hinenu v'chal avadim, we're your servants, we know who the master is." And they may not, whether they like it or don't like it, we don't know. But they're clearly demonstrating that he is their master, and it's something which they accept, even if the story which they make up, even if the story which they tell them about Yaakov is made up. But it nonetheless, they're clearly identifying Yosef as the master above them. And so Yaakov is demonstrating that this is something which you can be proud of, and it's not something you need to hide from or run away from. That, you know, I mean, this, you know, there's a complex that some people have, even if they are what they achieve, that they're never going to achieve whatever their older siblings have. you know, you could be president of the United States. Ah, but my parents like my older sibling most because they're whatever it may be. So Yosef is the king in Egypt, but nonetheless, maybe he has some sort of complex. And Yaakov is saying, no complex necessary. You are who you are, and you've achieved everything, and you earned every single step of it. And there's nothing to hide from, because it's real, and because you are who you are. So essentially what we're getting from all this is that there's a lot of imagery. Everybody who talks about the Birchos Yaakov has their own interpretation. I'm sure whole books could be written about this. But the Kli Yaakov's perspective is one which we appreciate. And of course, that's what we're here learning about tonight. And thank you all for coming.
It's good. Fabulous learning. Good job.